If you think trains will stop if they see a car on the tracks, you're right, they will. About a mile after they hit you. In 2015 alone, 230 people were killed at railroad crossings. Don't become the next fatality. Stop. Trains can't. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
This is Tim Roy. We've taken a 20-second timeout, and we're in the Warriors huddle.
We're going to bring you on to our huddle.
You are in the Warriors huddle with me, Bram. With me, as always, my boy and producer, Scott.
Scott here.
And I am so fired up to announce that joining us for the very first time in the huddle, a man with 28 years of broadcasting experience in the NBA, the immediately recognizable voice of the Golden State Warriors, and one of the best radio broadcasters I've ever had the pleasure of listening to, Mr. Tim Roy. What's going on, Tim?
Not much. So thank you so much for the kind words. You know, it's just I'm lucky. I've gotten to do exactly what I've wanted to do. I've always wanted to be a play-by-play sports broadcaster, and that's what I have done my entire life. So I'm truly blessed.
Well, no problem, and careful, because that's just the beginning of kind of the awkward ass-kissing from my angle. let me just get this right out of the way now. I've been following this team for a number of decades. I've been following your work since you first joined the Warriors in 95, and it really is just a pleasure to have you on, man. So thank you for coming on. This means the world to both Scott and I.
Well, thank you, guys. And if you've been following this team for that long and being a fan of that team, then you know you've been through the tough times, and you know, one of the things I keep saying on my broadcast, and I'm going to keep saying it because even if it gets a little repetitive, is that, you know, we all need to take a step back and savor all this, because this is not how it is in the normal NBA. I mean, we're truly in this golden era of Warriors basketball.
You know, I was going to save this till later, but I'll just ask it now. Scott and I, over the last three or four seasons of doing this, keep using the same word over and over and over again, and it's surreal. You know, when I look at this team, I think back to days of like David Wood and Clifford Rozier and Todd Fuller and all these losers who did nothing for us. Now, you know, we're at the heights of the basketball mountain. I know that collectively, you know, while you were calling both the Kings games and then you came over here, you had 16 straight years of losing seasons. Is this surreal for you too, or are you kind of used to this new success?
Well, I told Steve Kerr I need about four or five more years of this so I can get to 500. You know, I mean, no, you know, it's there were some pretty lean times in there. You know, we had it's very surreal though. The surreal is the perfect word. And last year, when I was working with Tom Tolbert, we used that word a bunch, because it's you know, you come out of games, you go, well, they didn't rebound and they didn't do this, and then you look at the score, oh, they won by 15.
Right.
Okay. So you know, and so it's really interesting to look at what they're doing right now and then, you know, kind of remember, you know, the days where, you know, you'd look up and it's like, oh, it's January and we're already, you know, 10 games out of a playoff spot, and we have, you know, almost a zero chance of making a playoff spot. And so, you know, I remember those days, you know, when you were just hoping that you could get the right guy in the lottery and turn the franchise around. And for whatever reason, you know, they just never got done.
No, of course. Well, gosh, you know, days where, like, we were fired up because Mike Dunleavy showed a little bit of emotion by throwing his jersey into the stands after getting a tech, because it showed he might have some heart. You know, no, we've come a long way. And I think one of the reasons you resonate so positively with the Warriors fan base is that, unlike most of this media mob who's now following the Warriors around, you were there under both. You were there when we were soul-suckingly bad under Cohan, and you were there when we turned, you know, into the luminary we are now under Lacob. I have a bunch of Warriors questions for you, but I got to start with some stuff about you. So I've already alluded to it. You come to us in 95 from Sacramento. What led to the switch? Why Golden State?
Because I had gotten into the NBA in 89. I took the job in Sacramento. I had been working in Phoenix. So I was doing a talk show. I was occasionally sitting in with Al McCoy on the Suns broadcast, and what a great, you know, learning experience that was. But I really wanted to do play-by-play. I was doing talk shows because I wanted to keep the play-by-play thing going.
Sure.
And I was doing well with the talk show business, and I liked it, but I really wanted to get into doing games, because that's all you talk about on talk shows. You talk about games.
Of course.
So when this Warrior job opened up, I really thought, you know what, this is a great place to live. It's a top five market, and you know, I want to push myself. I want to see where I can go, what I can do, and it's worked out better than I could have ever hoped for. You know, I mean, I've had this job, one of the great jobs. It's a great fan base. You know, it's a knowledgeable fan base. I've gotten to do, you know, major college football on the side. I did some A's work on the side a few years ago on TV, and so it the opportunities and the friendships and just walking into this fan base. And I remember when I first started, and this is, you know, the internet wasn't all that old then, but you would get these emails from fans, and they were always so upset. And the first couple of months, I'm thinking, oh my God, these people are really angry. What, you know, is it me? Are they angry at me? And then I realized they're angry because they care.
Right.
They're angry because they're passionate about it. And then I thought, wow. Then you know, these guys owe, you know, they're owed something better than what we're showing them right now. And unfortunately, it took a long time and new ownership to get that done. But it's always been a great fan base. And even in the worst years, I remember that if the Rockets came to town, and you know, it's the end of the Olajuwon era. You know, you could talk about that. It could talk about how good they were when Jordan stepped out for 2 years, how they stepped right in there and won back-to-back titles.
Sure.
And no one was going to send me an email or call and say, why are you talking about the Rockets so much? You know, because we have great fans here. We have great NBA fans here. You know, they know who the players are. They know what their strengths and weaknesses are. And you know, and it's not so in every market around the NBA.
Well, we at the risk of making this personal, we had no other choice, Tim. You know, we wanted to follow the Warriors, but there's nothing there. You know, so we had to kind of look around.
Let me real quick. I'll interject here. The 1 year when I get kidded by my brethren about how lucky and how easy my job is now, which is not necessarily true, but I remind them that it was either 99-2000 or 2000-2001. We beat the Clippers in February, and that brought our record to something like 15-33, and we finished the season 17-65.
Yep.
So we went 2-32 to end the season. It was like, you know, and the other joke I used, for years I could always plan my Memorial Day party because I knew it was going to happen. You know, I knew there was going to be no conflict. I could plan that ahead of time. We, you know, had everything ordered, ready to go. You know, not so much the last few years.
It's
not so much.
So great that when you say that, instead of like sweating nervously and getting defensively, I can finally kind of laugh about it and be happy now. You know, I mean, looking back at year, it immediately brings back all these nasty thoughts. You know, let me ask you this. We've had a ton of print media guys on, and what all of them will tell us is that their allegiance isn't to the team, which makes sense. It's to the story, so they have to stay neutral.
Correct.
For you, are you a fan of this team, or do you also have to stay neutral? How's that work on your end?
You know, there's no way that if you travel with a group of people and you make friendships and forge those friendships over time, there's no way you cannot become, you know, fans of some of these guys and just, you know, and in your heart of hearts, you kind of root for them. And I work for the Warriors. I'm a Warriors employee and make no excuses about that. But when I put the headset on, I also try to balance it. Okay. Because I want it to be like you're in your den and you're listening and you're in your car and you want the Warriors to win,
yep,
but you don't want me to put it in a vein of where that I'm actually rooting for them on the air. I mean, but my excitement when describing the play will tell you,
yep,
you know, just how good or bad things that are going for the Warriors. And I think, but I don't try to openly to root on the air. I try to be as objective as I possibly can. I want it to feel like, you know, you're sitting there with your buddies and you're, you're having a beer watching the game, and I'm sitting next to you, and we're just talking about the game, you know. And if I can put that picture, like you're sitting in the arena, or you know exactly what's going on and why things are going on, then that's what I do my job. I try to keep it right down the middle, because the one thing that this market demands is that they don't want their announcers to be homers. They want them to play it straight. And so when, you know, I'm not gonna name a particular player, but say back in the old days, if a player came down and jacked up a 22-footer when he shouldn't have been taking the shot, then that's a bad shot, you know, because everybody in the building or is watching on TV can see that's a bad shot. You know, you shouldn't have taken that shot. There's nobody underneath the boards. Everybody's getting to half court, and you decide, I'm going for my average, you know. I mean, so
I'd like to be able to guess what player you're talking about, but you just described about 50 to 60,000 players in the past, yeah. So, you know.
Yeah, take your pick.
And I'll give you credit, man, from an objective standpoint, because you do split the difference. Because on one side, you know, you'll hear play-by-play announcers do things like, you know, good guys 105, bad guys 102. You would never do that. But on the other side, I've never heard you use any of your signature line, you know, elevation, sensation, any of those with the opposing team. So, I mean, I feel like you do a great job of kind of covering both sides of that ball, yeah?
Yeah, and you know, like sometimes, like in Cleveland, okay, the game in Cleveland, Kyrie hits this great shot. I mean, Clay defended that about as well as you could do. I mean, there's nothing else he could have done there. And, you know, Kyrie, I mean, he had a great shot. You just got to kind of tip your hat. Yeah. You know, he's a hell of a player. And he's a guy that's not afraid to take that shot. Now, all the mistakes that led up to that scenario, that was probably more of the Warrior angle of it. But, you know, the actual end of the game, hey, you just got to say, hey, he hit a great shot. Give him credit. So, I mean.
And your take on being objective reminded me, I should have said this up front. Rusty Simmons is our normal co-host. Unfortunately, he's still dealing with some health difficulties. So for the audience at home, he'll be returning soon. And the reason why the objective thing made me think of it, Tim, is that he constantly pretends like he is neutral, where there's no way. He's just like he said, he's traveling with him. He's got to at least root for him a little bit.
Rusty's a good man. He's as good as they get.
Hopefully at some point he'll listen to this and accept the compliment. Last question about your past with this team. So 22 years to date, when you think back, what were some of the favorite Warriors you've covered? I mean, obviously Steph is an obvious guy, but what other names pop out in your mind? Who have you enjoyed watching play?
Loved watching, and I got him at the end of his career, but I love watching Mully.
Sure.
And just watching how good he was. And nobody, I think, in the modern day history of the game could get from the top of the key of the basket and go as slow as Chris did, but not get his shot blocked and not, you know, and able to score because he knew angles, he knew how to play, he knew how to use his body and the rim to protect the ball, and he was just he was so much fun to watch. I really enjoyed him, and he made me feel very welcome when I, you know, came in through the door there, and what wasn't a great time, you know, with the Warriors. We were struggling then, but Donald Foyle is a lifelong friend.
Yeah, sure.
He's the only guy that's ever come to the back of the plane where the staff and the broadcaster sitting, and he's got the op-ed of the New York Times in his hand. He says, "Well, we must talk about this." So we would sit down and discuss, you know, maybe a Krugman column or something like that, and just, you know, go over the issues of the day and how we would go about fixing them. And so he's a great man. He does a lot of good stuff, and his heart's in the total right place. Jay Rich was another one.
Sure.
That I loved. He just you know, he was the guy who was always coming back to the huddle in full lather. You know, I mean, he may not have been perfect on some nights, and he may have struggled and not shot the ball well, but you never faulted him for effort. His effort was always there. And I love how he looked at his career and decided, you know, early on, hey, you know what, I'm not going to be able to jump like this forever. Okay, I've got to figure out a different way. And he became a very serviceable three-point shooter.
Right.
You know, toward the middle and end of his career. And, that showed me he had a little intelligence about the game and just, you know, had one of the great, great smiles when you would walk into the locker room and really good guy. Monte, I've always gotten along well with Monte. I stopped in and saw him when we were in Indiana. And of course today, you know, this is the best locker room the last few years that I've ever worked with.
Sure.
You know, almost, you know, to a man, they're great guys, easy to talk to. So it's really a lot of fun to be around.
You know, before we get too far from the Jay Rich thing, so obviously I loved all of those players, and the thing that stuck out to me about Jay Rich, in addition to his talent and his heart and the whole nine yards, was his accountability. If memory serves, didn't he like take out a full page ad to the fans, like thanking them for their support and sorry that they didn't do as well as they should have in past seasons? I always loved that guy.
Leads
me to the other side of the coin, you know, and I certainly understand if you don't feel comfortable talking about it, but we had Jim Barnett on, and I was asking him, you know, who are some of the least favorite Warriors you've had to cover? And he brought up a name that brought immediate vitriol for me, because I had a lot of resentment for him, Roni Cicely. Is there anyone in your life, anybody who frustrated you while you were watching this team, whose name sticks out?
No, I mean, Roni was a little frustrating because he didn't, you know, I think occasionally you have big men, what happens is that they get pushed into basketball because they're big.
Yep.
Maybe not necessarily because they love it. And I think that was the case for Roni. I think he liked being Roni Cicely, and he liked being able to travel the world, and he came from a family that was well-to-do. But I don't think he really loved being an NBA player. And so I think that's where the frustration came, as he saw him. He had talent. He had some talent. And he could play a little bit, but he never worked at it to improve and to get better. And, you know, you could probably make the case that the player he was his second or third year was about as good as he was going to get in the NBA.
Right.
You know, not really frustrating. I mean, most of the guys I've dealt with over the years have been pretty straight up. I don't remember. I didn't get to know Sam Mack very well, I'll tell you that much.
Right.
He and I didn't run the same circles, thank God. let's see. I'm trying to think if there's anybody else. I'm not really sure if there's anybody that really frustrated me, per se.
No other names that came out, huh? Like people like Mookie Blaylock. I remember he didn't want to come to practice. No one else pissed you off?
No, actually, Mookie and I got along. I think Mookie was at a point in his life, though, where he was really struggling with the desire. He had come from a very good, very comfortable, very good situation in Atlanta where he knew everybody and everybody knew him. I think he was just frustrated that he was going to end his career basically on teams that weren't very good.
Yeah, right.
And I think he looked around, and I just think he had a real hard time handling that.
Yeah, weird, because we were so successful at that time.
He was very competitive, and I'll never forget this. And as I told this story to Steve Smith years ago, and then he told me, I'll tell you what he told me in response was, there was this one that I can't remember, some young point guard came in the league, and he wasn't a great player per se, but he came in and he made this great move on Mookie. I mean, this great little crossover, beat him to the rim, and you could just tell Mookie got mad. And the next two times down the floor, Mookie picked that kid. All right, you know, he went for a spin, bang, picked it, gone. Next time down, crossover, bang, Mookie picked that, led to a fast break. And so I told Steve Smith that story one time, and Steve Smith said Mookie was the only player he ever played with who said, this guy comes down the floor, I'm going to get a steal. And so you'll be ready to go.
Huh.
And I've had guys tell me, I'm going to knock down this shot. I've never had a guy tell me, I'm going to steal the ball.
Yeah, hell yeah.
So, but, you know, Mookie, you know, like I said, I kind of understood where Mookie was coming from right then. It was a real hard time to be with the Warriors. They were really banged up that year, and there wasn't a lot of structure, and it was pretty loose.
Tim, you are a professional, man. To be able to tell me Roni Cicely, look, he just wasn't trying that hard because he didn't like basketball, or being able to explain Mookie's frustration, I'm very impressed. I know I already said this, but this, in fact, will be my last personal question. You have all these iconic calls, the unbelievable elevation sensation, but most recently, and I think maybe the most iconic now, is the one you had at the end of the title season. You know, it's been 40 years, but the Bays team is finally the best team. This probably illustrates more about me, but let me keep it personal. If I was in that situation, the Warriors are in have a possible title clinching win coming up, I'd be the type of personality to come up with a line just in case they did it, maybe practice it a couple times, and then when they won, bust it out. Was that you, man, or did you come up with that on the spot?
No, Here's the thing. I told myself I wasn't going to script it. I wasn't going to do anything.
Yep.
And then we went to a timeout with a few minutes to go. I said, oh, my God, they're going to win this.
Yeah, right.
So it dawned on me. And then there's a chance that they could do it. And so the only thought I had was this is going to be – I remember saying there were two things I was really proud of. One was we had a free throw with about a minute to go, and I said, I wish Bill King was around to see
yep,
this.
Sure, yep.
Because he would have loved that Warrior team. He would have loved the way they played, and he would love to see them do so well again. And because, you know, getting to know him a little bit and talking with him, he was still had this great, great spot in his heart for the Warriors. And then, but the 40 years thing was the thing I was thinking about was my thought process was, you know what, this is cool because now – you know, this new generation of Warrior fans, the 75 team is their dad's team or their grandfather's team. You know, that's their team. And they've heard the stories of Al Idles and Rick Barry and how Al would play everybody and you know, the fight with Mike Reardon in the finals. They know all that stuff because of what their elders have taught them.
Sure.
Now they have their team,
right.
Their team that they can pass on. So that's what my thought was. I thought, you know, maybe, you know, now that they have a chance to have their team, that you know, you kind of link this two together. It's going to link these generations together, having their own championship team. So, and that's how it came out. It came out that way because I was trying to link the two together, and also the fact that, you know, I think it's pretty cool that the Warriors are the base team. Per se, you
right.
know, if you're a football fan, you're probably split either Niners or, you know, Raiders. I don't know anyone who likes both,
yeah.
And I don't know anyone who likes both the Giants and the A's. If they do, they're probably not from the Bay Area.
No,
so,
I don't trust anybody who likes both of those teams at the same
yeah.
time. Yeah.
So in that case, you know, the Warriors are kind of the base team, and that I've always loved that.
It's a great call, and if I was technologically savvy enough, it'd be my ringtone, but I can't figure it out, so it is what it is. Let's finally talk about this year's team, man. The obvious big name addition is Durant. He's been the focus of everyone. Let me ask you, and it's early, obviously, but from what you can tell, is this team better with Durant as a part of the roster than they were last year?
I think they will be. I think last year, the one aspect of all this that people keep forgetting about is they talk about this guy fitting, that guy fitting, is that the last year's team was also a product of continuity.
Yep.
You know, they had that same core, the same roster for the last 3 or 4 years. They had grown up together basically as an NBA team, and so they were ready. They came out of the gate ready. They knew how to play. They knew what they wanted to do, and that's why they got off to this tremendous start that they did. And so this year it's different. The continuity is different, working in a lot of different people. I think they will be better at the end of the year, and I think that's exactly what, you know, Steve Kerr is hoping on, is that they'll be able to guide this team, clean up some things, and get them kind of slowly inching toward their peak, which hopefully will happen in the late springtime and early summer. But because I think they're still, you know, still working out a little thing. The offense is different this year. You know, you don't start every you can't run the high screen roll live with Pachulia, but you can with McGee.
Right.
So that's different. Where last year you could run that same series with Festus Ezeli, no problem.
Yep.
It's a different – so you have a different equations out there. They're learning defensively. You know, last night was not a great defensive night for them when they played the Denver, but I think on the whole they've done a great job of figuring that out. And the fact that they were not very good at the beginning of the year defensively in the first week or so, first 2 weeks maybe, and they have gotten better at that over the whole, you know, course of the first couple of months, they have steadily improved on that. And I think one of the reasons is that I think we're all learning that Kevin Durant can be a great weak side help defender.
Right.
You know, with long arms and blocking shots and just changing shots. I mean, it's funny how the Warriors are at the top of the league in block shots. Now, granted, part of that is that teams are challenging them more. I don't think when you have a guy like Bogut, you're not going to have a tremendously high block shot number, and then when you back them up with Ezeli, because of the fact that it's not the shots they block, it's the ones they change. It's the ideas they change.
Yep.
You know, I can't tell you how many times, you know, you've seen somebody, they get to the paint, and all of a sudden they look up, there's Bogut, there's Ezeli, okay, I'm kicking this thing out, I'm not going up there. So I think they've done a really good job. To answer your question, I think they will be better than the previous teams, but I think we have yet to see that on a couple week basis where they've been able to do it all, partially
of course
because they've had so many games that have come easy to them.
And let's see, I couldn't agree with you more. I remember Steve Kerr coming out before the beginning of last year saying, look, these guys have been immersed in the system. I'm expecting big things. This is the year that they'll get it. That's exactly what happened. And you know, when that really stuck out to me was that Cleveland game. This team is so talented, it's really easy to forget that they're still gelling. And that Cleveland game was the first game these guys together have ever faced a situation where they were down one, 3.5 seconds left. Who the hell do you go to? And it's, you know, you got to learn. You got to start playing together and before you can really play together excellently. So that makes sense. But you already covered the next topic I was going to talk to you about, and it's defensive inconsistency. So a couple weeks ago, they play Utah. They hold them to 74. Draymond comes out and basically says, all right, I think we've got it figured out. He says, quote, like I've said before, you lose a guy like Bogut, you can almost funnel stuff to him because he can erase any mistake someone makes. It takes a while to adjust to not having that there, but I think we've adjusted. Then, over the next 2 weeks, they give up 113 to Detroit, 109 to Cleveland, 111 to Toronto, 119 to the Nuggets just last night. Is it as easy as losing Bogut that's led to this defensive inconsistency? Is it just because they haven't played together? What do you attribute this to?
Well, there's a couple things going on there. Now, when you look at the fact they played Cleveland and Toronto, let's also, you know, admit the fact that those are two of the better teams in the league.
Yeah.
And that they're pretty good teams. And so, you know, especially Toronto, they're such an interesting team to watch. You know, they have the best rated offense in the league. Cleveland has the fourth best offense, you know, in the league.
Right.
And so when you're playing those teams, you have to give them a little credit too. They're good, and they're gonna test you on the defensive end. I thought last night there were a number of straight line drives where a guy gets the ball and he goes right to the rim, and nobody gets in front of him. Nobody makes him change direction. And so I think they didn't defend as well as I thought maybe they could early, and that gave Denver some confidence. And Denver's playing better as well. Their last 10-11 games have been much better than what they were, say, the previous 20. And so, let me tell you, that kid Jokic.
I was just about to say that. That guy is for real.
He's going to be good.
Yeah, that guy's for real. That open court play where he went around the back and then still went right down there, that was a nice play, man. I was very impressed.
That's, you know what? Scott Hastings, who does their TV, told me before he thinks he's going to be one of the best. He said he's going to be the best passing big men, you know, of all time, possibly. But I'll wait on that. But yeah. He's going to be one of the best. I mean, he threw a couple passes last night. He had that no look pass.
I remember. The best passing big man of all time is a hell of a proclamation, especially for a guy who's only 20. But you know, we'll see. I know that we're racing up against time because you have a radio appearance. So. Let me give you some kind of miscellaneous quick-fire questions, and then we'll get you the hell out of here. One, Cleveland loss. The thing that has been most frustrating to me about the Cleveland loss is that I've had numerous people come up and ask, do I think the Warriors have a mental block now? Because they've lost four straight, including the finals losses to Cleveland. How would you answer that? Do you think there's any mental component to this thing?
Well, first of all, I still think that if Draymond doesn't get suspended, the Warriors win that maybe in five.
Absolutely. Maybe. Yep.
But secondly, be that as it may, if you look at the entire seven-game series, the Warriors lost by a combined, I think it's a total of like 4 points. I think Cleveland scored four more points than they did, I believe that's right, in the finals against the Warriors. And then they lose by one after basically coughing up a 14-point lead with many things that are easily correctable.
Sure.
Okay, you can correct a soft cross-court pass that leads to a dunk.
Sure.
Okay, you can just take that right out of the repertoire. So, you know, to lose on the road to the defending champions, a team that has one of the best players of all time in LeBron James, one of the better players in the league in Kyrie Irving, and lose by one, yeah, I didn't come out of that game feeling awful about that. I thought, you know what, I think they're going to be okay. I think they're going to be fine when they play Cleveland again in a couple weeks, and I think if they meet again in the finals, I like the Warriors' chances.
I'm with you. You know what frustrated me, and I won't drag us down this rabbit hole, but just to answer it. So following the Game 7 loss, Scott and I did a podcast, and it was unnecessarily optimistic. But what my point was that, look, there's upsides to this. This team is going to learn from this loss. And the thing that concerned me about that game in Cleveland is that it didn't look like that was the case. Like Steph's turnovers when he's kind of careless with the ball, those lazy passes you were talking about, we saw those again. Draymond leading with emotion, you know, like after he couldn't play in game five, we still saw him lead with emotion in the first quarter against Cleveland. And I was hoping to see a little bit more growth than that. But I agree with you, which, you know, second random miscellaneous topic. The Warriors announced today they're going to begin construction on the Chase Center, the new arena over in San Francisco, on January 17th. You and I spent the first 10 minutes of this podcast waxing poetic about the fan base. And I should admit to you, I'm an East Bay guy. I live in Oakland. I have my entire life, so I'm not totally unbiased. But I'm really afraid that they're going to lose some of this home court advantage, not because it's a change in area codes, but because it's a change in tax brackets. You know, these tickets are going to be so damn expensive by the time we end up in SF, I'm not sure who's going to be there. Am I being crazy? You know, are you worried at all about them losing this historical home court advantage?
I think the fan base will still respond the same way. I think you know, the fact it's going across the bay is you know, it's going to be a different vibe. And I think anytime you move into a different building, it's going to be a different vibe. You know, no one will ever, you know, replicate Oracle that way.
Right.
But you know, I'm going to go in with an optimistic look at it, in the sense where I go back to fan base. You know, the ticket prices, so they are what they are. It's pro sports, and
sure.
And that's just the way it is now. It's across the board in all sports. So I'm going to be optimistic that the love of this team will still be there, and that the passion for the NBA game will still be there. And so I'm going to wait and see. But I'm optimistic that the fact that we have such an intelligent fan base in terms of knowing the NBA, that it won't be, say, a drastic drop that you're afraid of.
Good. I hope you are right. Final thing. It's one of my favorite segments. We call it story time with, and then whoever's there. So in this instance, it would be story time with Uncle Timmy. I'd like to give you a name. You give me whatever story pops into your head. Chris Mullin.
Going into the locker room my first year with the Warriors and seeing him with both feet in an ice bucket, and he's got his shoulders wrapped up in ice. He's got ice everywhere, and I walk over to him. I said, "Man, you're really icing down here." He goes, "That's why I've had a long career, just like that."
Maybe I'll start icing. Maybe I can make my way into the NBA. Tim,
there you go.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate it, not just for today, but at the risk of going back to the ass kissery for the last 22 years. You have been phenomenal. We really appreciate it. I'm sure I'm speaking for Warriors fans everywhere, and I hope we can do this again.
I would love to do it again. I had a blast, and thank you so much for the kind words. I've always said it's been my pleasure to work again, to work for the fan base, and it's just a... It's one of the world's great jobs. You know, I'm a lucky guy. Take care, guys.
Tim's the man, huh?
Oh, yeah. It's so great to listen to that voice and then actually kind of getting a look behind the scenes a bit about his whole craft and the history he's had.
It's so weird. As an old school Warrior fan, it's so weird when we talk to these guys, Jim Barnett, Tim Royce, the people who have been there forever. I feel like a kid who's meeting Mickey Mouse. I mean, obviously this isn't a video podcast, but I'm sure Scott can confirm that I'm sweating like a maniac, like I have Ebola because I get so nervous doing these guys. And it's just such a pleasure having him in, man.
I wish I could videotape all the nervous ticks that you have going on.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that you can't, but thanks for adding on top of the sweat. Before we get out of here, I know it's been a while, but there's a couple of things I wanted to touch on. The first is just the Cleveland game. You heard Tim's take. I had a couple. What were your thoughts, man?
I hate to start off with the reffing, but it really was the first game all season where I felt like the refs were way too involved in the game and obviously made two terrible calls down the stretch with not calling the foul that Jefferson had on Durant.
Yep.
And the LeBron hanging on the rim. That was that's like basketball 101 that you can't do that, and it's a technical.
Basketball 101. If Draymond Green had done that, they would have suspended him for the rest of the year. He may have been out of the NBA. So no, there's no doubt the officiating was god awful. And in fact, they came out and the 2-minute report said that the NBA missed a couple of important ones. The tech you're talking about, and then the foul at the end of the day. But let's organize our thoughts, positives and negatives. For me, positive, we already kind of talked about it with Tim Roy. But the bottom line is this team has a lot of room to grow. They're still figuring themselves out. And despite that, they went into Cleveland, had the ball in Kevin Durant, the probably best scorer in the history of the world's hands, or at least certainly currently the best scorer in the NBA, one-on-one against Richard Jefferson with 3.5 seconds left. Had he not fouled him, I take that, you know, any day of the week. I mean, that's not a bad setting to have.
Except when you were up by 14, and you should never have had let it get to that point.
Which leads to the negatives. We cannot stop Kyrie from getting in the lane.
He has proved way more clutch than I ever thought he could be. You can't defend him better than that, but it's frustrating.
He's got the smuggest face, and he takes over the smug face title from Chandler Parsons. In fact, I hereby hand over the smuggest face title from Chandler Parsons over to Kyrie Irving. The other thing that worries me, and I got to be honest, when I was looking at the beginning of the finals, when we were going into this year, especially with Durant, I always thought that the Warriors were just simply better. It's just a matter of basketball, roll the ball out, of course they were going to win. That is not necessarily true. They're still a better team. They're still going to win in six in June, as far as I'm concerned. But it's a mistake to completely count out the Cavs. That is a well-maintained team. If we can't stop the kind of rim penetration that Kyrie and LeBron are able to do, they have so many shooters on that floor that they can cause problems for us. So, you know, we don't have to break down a game that happened a week ago. But it was a little bit concerning, and the Warriors have some growing to do. All right, one last thing that we have to cover. So Toronto game, they won, but this has nothing to do with the actual game. Did you watch that game on TV?
I watched that game after I went to the Wizards-Pacers game because I was back in D.C. for Christmas.
You had to get that in.
It was remarkable to go to a Wizards-Pacers game and then later get to watch the Warriors play.
Why?
I mean, just a real difference in the type of basketball.
You mean one was burger terrible and the other one was pretty good, or...?
Well, I'll leave that up to you to tell which one I thought was better.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, the Toronto game, again, I'm not talking about the basketball. Here's what stuck out to me. I don't know what the hell it was. Some company was giving out free shirts. And for those who have been listening to the podcast for a while know that this is kind of a pet peeve for me. But they gave out these white shirts. The team wanted it to be a quote-unquote whiteout. And I would say conservatively 30% of the people wore the shirts. That's unacceptable, man. If we had more time, I would have asked Tim Roy about it. But here's the way I look. It depends on why you're going to the game. If you're going to the game to support the team has decided that the best way you can do that is wear the shirt and have some, like, visual support. If you're going to it the same way you would go to a movie, you know, or like some other passive thing where you're just there to enjoy the play in front of you, then fine. You're wearing a jersey, something else you don't want to cover up. You're there for your own purposes. But if you find yourself there and you want to root for it, put on the damn shirt, man. Just put on the shirt. It's not that hard. It takes 5 seconds. It's unacceptable for me when they don't do that. Am I being out of control? Would you have put on the shirt while you were there?
I love free t-shirts. I would gladly put on many a free t-shirt. Now, I think Bram is maybe the type who would bow down to peer pressure.
Yeah, immediately. Yeah, no, as fast as I can. But that's a separate conversation. Even if there was no, I don't need the put your shirt on cam to get me to put on the shirt. I get there and I'm fired up to see it in the seat. If I'm there before anybody else, the shirt's already on. You know, I could have a suit on and I'm putting the shirt on over my suit jacket. That's the kind of passion I bring.
What I love about the free shirt is it's a free pass to do whatever. I mean, there's no fashion sense at that point. Everything is equal. Everyone just puts on the shirt. You can have your suit on. You can have something you would never normally put. If I saw you walking down the street in a suit and you had your t-shirt on, you know, during the day, that would be a weird look. But I love the idea that during the game, you can do it.
How many games do you find yourself concerned about whether or not you're wearing the right thing? A lot?
Well, when you go to a Wizards game,
you're wearing like a Hawaiian hula like dress or something. Like, if only I had a shirt to cover this up.
DC has a very weird culture. It's a little like the East Coast Hollywood scene because you've got the whole political aspect to it. It's kind of a who's who situation.
I will have to take your word on that because I never have been, nor will I ever go to a game in DC. All right, you guys, huge fun, true every week, certainly true this week. Please remember that if you're looking for us, we can be hit up at warriorshuddle@gmail.com. Our Twitter account is @warriorshuddle. Our website is warriorsworld.net. We also have a very exciting announcement. We are joining a brand new podcast network called the Almighty Ballers Podcast Network. Hop on. It's the ABPN, Almighty Ballers Podcast Network. We are excited to be a part of them. If you want to check out their website, it's thealmightyballer.com. Check that out and listen to our show on there. It'll actually help us a lot. That is everything from us. Anything else we got to report this week?
No, just a big happy new year to everyone. Let's do this in 2017.
Exactly right. Happy new year. Go Warriors. And hopefully we'll see you in a week.
Good, good.
There is more to me, Queen Eliara of Elfgard, than my elven magic. Just as there's more to Geico than saving you money, Geico also gives you 24/7 access to licensed agents online, on the phone, or on the Geico app. And while I am a mighty elf queen, I am also a mighty big fan of barbecue potato chips. Minions! More smoky mesquite!
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.